But no, I felt very, very sorry for him.
Albert Hawkins, Reel 2. So, early days in Korea, mm-hmm. Did you have any idea, I mean, who were you fighting? What did you know about what you were doing?
Well, we were talking North Koreans, basically, you know, and to be quite honest, you can't tell the difference between a North Korean and South Korean. You know, I mean, it's the same as us, you know. And we knew eventually, like, if he was in the line, whatever was in front of you would be the enemy. So, you know, that was about it, you know. But, excuse me, we, not really much information, like, you know, in that respect, like, you know. But refugees, we had a hell of a lot of refugees coming through.
Really?
Yeah, just
Korean people.
Yeah,
they were
Korean.
Going southwards.
Yeah, they were coming through south. Yeah, and
what were they like?
And
what state were they in?
Oh, they was in terrible state. You know, sort of panicking. You know, little kids was crying. You know, crying for their parents, and you know, generally crying. The women and the old men, the old boys and the old girls, and the mothers, you know, and young girls as well. They was absolutely terrified. You know, because they didn't know what the hell was happening. Like, all they want to do is get somewhere nice and safe, like, you know. But, it was pitiful to see them, poor little buggers.
Did that make it seem worthwhile, what you were doing?
Oh, yes, it did, actually, yeah, in that respect. But at the same time, like, it was sort of... I felt sorry for them, you know, don't get me wrong, like, you know. But at the same time, it sort of didn't really connect... Because that was early stages, like, it didn't really connect to what was the overall situation, like, you know. But, I felt very, very sorry for him.
Where did you first have contact with the enemy?
I think it was Sue Wong, I think, I'm not. But then again, I'm not sure, my love, no. It's all...
What do you remember about that first contact? I mean, you've not fired a shot in anger before.
No, we haven't. No, that's right. Only for good targets. Yeah. First I can remember is we come under fire. As I say, I'm not 100% sure where we was. Like, we came under fire, and it was automatic with us. You've been told, is it wait until you see something before you fire? You know, it's no good just blasting away like that because there might mean anything there. So as soon as you see a movement, of course, we opened up. Whether I actually hit anyone at that distance, I have no idea. No idea.
What sort of terrain was that? Was that hilly?
It was hilly. Yeah. It was hilly. It was hilly, and it was also sort of more like brush, more like brush in trees, like, you know. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
But was it frightening?
Yes, it was actually. Yeah. To be quite honest, if anyone says to you that they wasn't frightened, well. Something wrong with them, you know, you're frightened all the time. Yeah.
Someone's trying to kill you.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah, mm. Yeah. But funny enough, I didn't really think that was going to happen, you know, I didn't really think that way, like, you know. But, it was frightening, I mean, without a doubt, like, you know. I mean, every time, you know, no matter where you went, you never knew what to expect, you know, you was always on edge, if you like. Yeah. Even when he was asleep, he was on edge.
Because, I mean, you were living outside, weren't you?
Yeah, oh yeah, we got all the time, yeah.
I mean, how hard was that? Because, I mean, it was terribly cold.
It was cold, yeah. All we had was what we stood up in, basically, and a blanket and a poncho, and that was it. He was, oh, bloody hell, froze stiff, you know, froze to the bone. Most of the time, your bones would ache, and the pain would be terrible, you know, but... You just had to get on with it. There's nothing anybody could do. I mean, everybody was in the same boat, so you couldn't do anything about it. You just carried on, you know. Some of the lads managed to get hold of some, you know, warmer stuff, but I never got anything at all. You know, nothing at all. But no, it was bloody cold. Yeah.
Did you see much of the Americans in these early days?
No, not a lot really. No, the only time most times we seen them was if we was going to go up. Up the line, they was coming back out of the line. But a couple of times we was up on the hillside, and in some area, and then all of a sudden you couldn't smoke or anything like that. You know, it was complete darkness, and then all of a sudden you look behind you, see a glow coming up the road, There was a Yanks in the trucks, they put up the red lights blaring, and they bailed out, and then within no time they had canteens going up there, you know, cookhouses and all those what, and the fire was going, and it's just like an ordinary day, you know, to them was out. And we were still across the bloody freezing, you know, and they had fires going left, right and centre. You could smell the grub coming over, and it was fresh grub, and all we had was tin stuff, you know.
That must be really hot.
Oh, it was. Yeah, a couple of times, me and a mate of mine, we nipped off down the outside and got into their place and nicked some grub and some fags and then brought it back up on our own hill.
You didn't get stopped by their countries or anything?
You never seen one, love. Never seen one, no.
Did that make you angry at the way the British Army was treating you, or did you think you were doing it the right way?
No, not really. There again, it was, you know, it was something which part of our life, and you had to knuckle down to get to it, you know. I never really felt angry about anything really out there, you know. The only time I did feel angry, of course, was when I was taken prisoner, but that's beside the point, right now.
So you were with Colonel Carr most of the time.
Yeah.
So what was he actually doing? I mean, did you know what he was? What his target was, or what his challenge was to get on
No, we were completely in the dark, my love. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as far as I know, in those days, it was only the commanding officers and the platoon sergeants and the platoon officers and so forth. They knew what they was doing, but everybody else didn't know. I haven't got a clue. Mm-hmm. The thing what always tickled me was that if you go out on patrol, someone always knew where they was going and how to get back. But 90% of us had no idea where we was going, where we was, and how we were going to get back.
Do you remember your first patrol?
Yeah, it was...
Was it a night time?
In the night time, oh yeah, night time patrol, yeah. We was out on a listening patrol. And that's, you know, you just go out and you try to pick up as much information as possible, you know. And under no circumstances must you fire, unless you're fired on, you know. And we've been out pretty all night, I think. And as far as I can remember, we never actually found anything at all. You know, we came through bypassing a few villages, and then moved in closer just to make sure there was nothing there. But no, as far as I know, we didn't find anything. And we got back to base just before first light. Yeah. So basically, we wasted night, like, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
It's very frightening, though. Because, I mean,
you never knew what was going to happen. No. You was so keyed up. You was terribly, well, you was terrified, actually, yeah. But you still had to keep your wits about you because you didn't know what the hell was going to happen, like, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
You had to have a lot of faith in the...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Who led that patrol?
No, honestly, love, I can't remember. No. But it's not only that, it's that... after a while, like with your mates, you definitely become mates, you know. Well, you're more like brothers. It's a family, you know. It's like, say, when you're a toddler and you're going out with your parents or a relative, you know damn well that they're going to look after you. Yeah? Well, every time we used to go on patrol or whatever happened, is that we always knew that we had our mates around us, so we was. All in it together, looking. I mean, I'd be looking after him, he'd be looking after me. So that kind of attitude, you know. It was, you know, it's a lazy even today. It's a brilliant atmosphere. You know, like when I meet Benny, for instance, you know, Little Fragoni, and Jack, Ron Norley, loads of Tony Eagles, George Hughes. There's loads and loads of people I could mention, but every time we see each other, it's. It's brilliant, you know. We're back together again. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah.
So this sort of goes on then. You were proceeding up country, going north again.
Yeah.
And was there a lot of opposition? Did you?
First of all, when we broke out, there was hardly any opposition really. But then, eventually, when the Chinese came in, because if I remember rightly, we got up way past Pyongyang. And we wasn't far from the Yellow River, I think, from the border. And that's when the Chinese starts coming in. Yeah. Different kettle of fish, eh?
When did you first see Chinese? Do you remember?
I believe that was just just as we were coming out of Busan, I think. Yeah, I think it was just as we were coming out of Busan. And then I think that was December time, I think, I'm not sure. And then in January, I believe it was January, yeah, the Ulster Rifles. So they got a work paste in. We actually come through their valley, because we had the Gloucesters, the Ulsters, and the Northumberlands. We was in the 29th, yeah. And at that particular time, we was all together, you know, different areas, of course. And the Ulsters had come under fire, and we had to actually withdraw through their sort of line, if you get what I mean. And as we was coming through, as I can remember rightly, the stuff was coming left, right and centre. But we actually got through without even firing a shot. Yeah. So we actually got through, but a hell of a lot of Ulsters got killed. And there was quite a lot taken prisoner, which we met up, you know, in the April, of course. Well, later than the April. Mm. Yeah. But
so you went on pushing northwards.
Yeah. And then, as I say, we got up to the Yellow River, and then all of a sudden everything turned topsy turvy. We were all coming back again, well, you know. it's funny, I know, but I mean, we used to march practically everywhere we go, you know. And the Yanks would be in trucks going up or down, but mostly they was going down, and we was going up, like, you know. And you might do what, I don't know, maybe 10, 15, 20 miles a night, you know, and then you just stop and you get in, start digging in, and all of a sudden somebody come along and say, right, back up your gear, we're going. And go a bit further, you know, and then same thing again. Then all of a sudden they say, right, we're moving, and then this time you start coming back.
It must have seemed a bit pointless in some
way. Oh, it was. Mm. But to us, look, it was a discipline. Is that as soon as you stopped and you're going to stay there, you automatically dug in for safety anyway. But you automatically dug in, and then I can't remember where it was now. But there's one place we came out. We had to come out on a. It, that might have been coming through. Oh bloody hell. Happy Valley, that's right, Happy Valley they call it. That's when the Ulsters got it. I think we'd done a 20-yard mile bash, I think. And I remember it was snowing. And we were sweating like a pig because we had all our kit going with us, like, you know. And we got back, eventually, to this one area. And there was me and Tony Eagles. And I can't remember who else it was. But we got in this area, and there was pigsties. And we dug in the pigsties to keep warm. Yeah. And we put the blankets down, put the ponchos down, the blanket down. And we had a good night's kip in there. It was bloody brilliant, yeah. And it was lovely and warm. We could still smell the pigs, like, you know. But, of course, the pigs had gone a long, long since, like, you know. But it was so comfortable. It was so warm. Oh, it was unbelievable, yeah. And if I remember rightly, that was a place, yeah. They brought up the 25-pounders, if I remember rightly. And we were walking during the night with this, you know, weapons going off, like, you know, vibrations on the ground, like, you know, yeah. Yeah.
So, on you went.
Sorry?
So it continued on.
Yes. And then we, if I can remember rightly, we eventually pulled back where we got taken prisoner on the Imgium at, you know, Saul Marie.
So what, from your point of view, happened?
Well, I was pretty, you know, comfortable, really, because I was with Battalion HQ, and we was sort of back out of the line, if you get what I mean. Mm. But the forward companies, A, B, C, D, was in the front, like, and you could hear where we was. You could hear all the commotion. You could see all the flashes and all the what's going on, like, you know. We was in the valley, actually, in the valley between the edge headquarters and the forward positions, yeah. And we was told by Drum Major that we had to go forward and to give any lads what was coming through covering fire. Well, we was led down the other side of the road. We wasn't dug in then, by the way, because we never had time to dig in. And saw these figures coming down, and I naturally assumed it was our blokes, But it wasn't. It was a chinx. Some got through before, you know, before he even registered that they was chinks, yeah. As soon as he registered, of course, we opened up on them, you know. And
how many were there?
Oh, God. Lots, yeah, lots, lots. Yeah, lots and lots, yeah, yeah. Mm. And then we was eventually withdrawn back down again a little bit further. And then the we got artillery coming in. We pulled back so that the shells could, you know, land in the valley there. And then once the artillery bombardment had gone, we moved forward again. And then our lads was starting to come back through. And as they was coming through, we was giving them cover and for us so they could get through. And then go back up onto our last position. You know. And then eventually, we all gets back up on our last position. And then we had air support, artillery again, you know, useful stuff like. But there was, well, there was lookouts, to be quite honest. There was lookouts. It was all over the bloody place.
Yeah. Was there much confusion? Because, I mean, it was all
it went terrible wrong, yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of confusion. I mean, we didn't know exactly, no, for a start. I mean, we didn't know really how far they was behind us, like, you know. We didn't exactly know how many was hitting us, but we knew it was a bloody lot, you know. And every so often, you hear the shells go over. Then you hear the aircraft coming in, but no one was telling you that we were going to get airstrike, or no one was going to tell you we were going to get a stonk on, as we call it, you know. And then quite a few times, me and several lads, can't remember who the hell we was now, because we all got sort of separated from each other, but also plonked in with strangers, you know what I mean? So you didn't really get to know each other that way. And many a time I found myself maybe with three or four lads, and we're engaged with the enemy, and then all of a sudden you get something coming at the back of you, and you turn around and look to defend yourself at the back, and you was completely encircled. But that was only a few of you, you know. And then you get up, you fight away with that, and then you find some of your friendlies, and then you go with them, and then same thing happened again, look, you know. You was all, oh, it was bloody chaotic. Yeah, it was chaotic. You ain't got a clue what was happening. Grenades was coming down at you, left, right, and bloody centre, and it could have been our blows for all we know, because we had no idea, look, you know. Yeah. It was chaotic. It's frightening, very, very frightening, though. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, there were quite a few sort of medals won that day, weren't there?
Yes, there was. Did you
see
yeah.
any of the people?
No, I didn't love, yeah. No. Yeah. To be quite honest, it's maybe hard to say this, but you're so engrossed in what you're sort of doing, you don't take notice of what's going on around you, you know what I mean? Yeah, you're tackling your media problem, like, and you don't really see what's going on around you, like, you know. I remember seeing, you know, lads go down, but at the time it didn't really register, if that's the word for it. Mm. I see lads go down wounded, I see lads go down killed, but it didn't really, at that particular time, it didn't really register, no, because you were so preoccupied, it was unbelievable, you know. Yeah, yeah.
So, how long did all this go on for?
Well, it started on the, if I remember rightly, I think we had a little bit of a purge, I think, on the Saturday. That's right, it was Saturday, yeah. We had an advance party, went out onto the river, and there was, I forget how many was in there now. In there, I think Tony Eagles was there, I think, and they was on the bank of the river, and as the Chinese starts coming across, there was only a few at first, of course they opened up, then more and more of them come down, and then they asked for field fire, artillery, and the artillery dropped into the river, and then when they run out of ammunition there, they get back, you know, and when they come back, that's when we got the first inkling that what was about to happen. But then it seemed to calm down, and then on the Sunday night, that's right, Sunday night, it really started on the Sunday night, yeah. And then it was continuous then, Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, and up until Wednesday morning, you know, yeah. But I wasn't firing sort of 24 hours a day, you know. The position, whichever position I was in, is it some would come towards you, and I'll say some would behind you. You fight your way out of it, and then maybe, I don't know, maybe an hour, maybe 2 hours, he would be caught on that sector, and then somebody else over the other way is getting the rope paced in, you know, that kind of attitude. Then all of a sudden it flare up again. So he wasn't continuously fighting, you know, for 24 hours a day. But it, you never had time to, never had time to rest because you were all, always on alert, you know, and you never had time to eat. Well, we had never had nothing to eat anyway. I can remember somewhere along the line, who said Spud Murphy, Sergeant. Yeah, Sergeant Murphy. He was on the Vickers, and there's a cool water cool thing, yeah, machine gun. And he comes around with a bloody great big jerry can, and he said, "We run out of water, and we can't use the machine guns because they're too hot. Can anybody pass water in the can?" Eh? And I cracked up. You know, I hadn't had nothing to drink for about 2 days. No way I could help out. Like, no. but he must have got some from somewhere, because not long afterwards they opened up again. You know, but and then somewhere along the line, I can't remember where it was, I got issued a small tin. It'd be about the size of you know, a small tin of beans. Mm. Yeah, about that size, and a square of chocolate, and two bowl of sweets. Mm. And I think, if I remember rightly, I think that was on the Wednesday. That's right, on the Wednesday. And I opened up the can, the tin, and I'd see what was in there, and it was margarine. So I just took my finger in there. I was bloody starving. Yeah. Well, all of us was really, like, you know. Yeah.
Like zombies. I mean,
well, yeah, we.
Water,
yeah,
food.
Sleep, that's right.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the ammunition, you know, that ran out as well. Mm. And then we was given the order, breakout at 10:30. Yes, right, at 10:30. Mm. Breakout at 10:30, every man for himself. And if anybody never had no ammunition, which I'd run out a long time ago, and smash your weapons, you know. And I just took the bolt out. At the top end of the boat, or at the end of the boat, then, is a little firing pin mechanism. Yeah, you just unscrew that, lob that one way, lob the bolt the other way, took the mag out, took the spring out, put the mag that way, spring the other way, and then picked up the rifle by the barrel, and then just smashed the stock so it broke in two, and then just pinned it, and that was it.
Who gave you the order about the breakout?
It come down directly from Colonel Clarner, if I remember rightly. Yeah.
What did you think about that, and did you think there was any alternative?
Well, no, we had hoped that somebody would come up, you know, and get us out, but apparently, of course, we didn't know at that time, because, like I say, the only soldier hadn't got a clue what the hell was going on, you know. Half the time, we didn't even know what day it was, so, and where we were, nobody told us exactly where we were, what the name of the place was, or whatever, like, you know. Now we automatically assume that somebody's going to, you know, come up and break up, you know, get into us, like, you know. Of course, I found out years later that they did actually try to get out, but unfortunately, the one lot what did get through was in the wrong valley, and that's where Mad Mike he got out. Mike Harvey, yeah, he got out with some lads. Fair play to him, like, you know, he got out with some lads, and he got back safe and sound, but. There again, most of us didn't know exactly what was behind us, you know. And I never even got off the hill, to be quite honest. Never got off the bloody hill. Now, everywhere I went, there was all these bloody queer fellas.
What did you think of the Chinaman soldiers?
Well, a ragtag army, if you like. But they gained. Almost basically was manpower, not so much their firing power. They wasn't a very disciplined, you know, mob, like, you know, not like us, like, now. If we could have had the men and the machine, well, the weapons, ammunition rather, I think it would have been a different kettle of fish. It would have been an entirely different kettle of fish. Yeah. But I can remember that, especially during the nights when they put in their attacks. Is that you get this bloody one bloke come up with a bugle, or bugle, that's right, blowing all different kinds of things in, tambourines and things like that, and whistles and all that, and Drummy Bus, he was at the rear of me, and he gets up, and he blows every call except retreat, And as soon as she starts blowing on the bugle, like, everything stopped. You know, the queer got them confused. Yeah. And of course, he got this Horace Cookhouse. Everybody started jeering him. Because, you know, I don't know if you know, but in the forces, like, is it, you go by the bugle call. And like Cookhouse, for instance, that's the group, yeah? So when that goes, you know you're going to get somewhere to eat. Mm. Of course, when he got up and blew that, we all started jeering, like, and shouting and bawling. Like, yeah. Yeah.
So the order came, everyone, for himself.
Yeah, mm. Yeah. And then,
like, half past 10.
Yeah, it was half past 10, if I was a good member, half past 10 breakout, yeah. That was Wednesday, the 25th of April, yeah. 1951, yeah.
And what happened to you?
Oh, where I was, I managed to get, you know, get away, like, and there was, I forget now, there was another kiddie with me, but I can't remember who he was. And we went back up over the top of the hill. And as we were coming over the hill, there was a padre, that was Sam Davis, and I think it was Hickey, I think, the MO, and there was quite a load of wounded blokes, you know, led down. And they had the Red Cross, you know, stuck up. And Sam Burns said to me, he says, come and stay by me, lad. He says, we look after you. Well, I says, no, thank you, sir. I'm gone. Yeah. And I must have passed him maybe three or four times because I was always looking, you know, like a bloody bumblebee, basically. I was going all over the place to try and get off the hill, yeah. And then in the finish, this one laddie was in front of me, like, and he went forward. As he went forward, machine gun opened up, and of course we hit the deck. And apparently it was coming from Kumakasan. And there was a bush, I don't say about, well, that high, I suppose. And I was down by this bush, and you could actually hear it coming across. And then every so often, one of the leaves would be, you know, sort of tumble down on you, like, you know. And I thought, some days. So it rolls over, and it gets out of the way. I went the one way, matey. Can't think of who it was. He went the other way, and then after a while, the gun packed in. I guess I'll make a dash for it, and then we come under fire again. So you hit the deck again, you know. Same thing basically. 1 minute he was okay, the next minute he was under fire, and then I come out into this bit of a clearing on the hill, and I see three Chinese. It was about 10 yards in front of me, you know. And the one had two of them had a bird gun, one had a rifle, and the two with the bird guns. They laid the weapons down and went like this, you know, to me, like, you know. And I looked at them, like, and I looked around and I thought, well, no point. So I walked towards them. And the one with the rifle, he comes up towards me, like, and he gives me a push. He gives me a push down the hill, so he gives me a boot up the backside. Gets down the hill, fair play, the other two comes down with me, like, takes me down the hill. There were probably about a dozen of us, I suppose, and I was relieved to see someone, you know. And we was down in the valley where the little stream comes through, and we had water two days or more, I think. And the first reaction I done was just got on the deck, and, you know, I should have done it actually, but because you didn't want the water contaminated and all, you know. Drank some water, and then gets up and. I believe then we was in such a state that we didn't realise what the hell was happening. You know, we was in so trauma, they call it today, I suppose, yeah. I have no idea, but you wasn't 100% with it, you know. And then there was quite a few chinks there, and then this one come along, and he had a Sten gun, and he was trying to, you know, operate it, basically, like, and you could tell from it, he hadn't got a clue what he was doing. And all of a sudden, he looked at it, looked, and then he found the old book, so he pulled it, looked, and I thought, oh, that's on bloody safety. Anyway, it wasn't. He put his finger on the trigger, and the shots would go left, right, and centre. We hit the deck, and another chinky comes along, and gave him a right hammer in. You know, fair play. Took the weapon off him, and gave him a bloody hammer in, yeah.
Albert Hawkins, end of reel two.